Okay, so you're deep into Fourth Amendment law, right? And you get to these moments where it's like, how does this actually work? Like on the street, you know what I mean? Like, when can law enforcement enter private property without a warrant? It really gets you thinking about the balance between protecting individual rights and making sure law enforcement can do their job.
Absolutely. And that's exactly where things get really interesting, legally speaking, because you have this head-on collision between someone's right to privacy and the government's need to keep people safe. That's where some of the most tricky and kind of fascinating legal issues pop up.
And that's what we're going to really dig into today. We're doing a deep dive into what's called the exigent circumstances exception to the Fourth Amendment. So as you know, the Fourth Amendment protects people from unreasonable searches and seizures. And this exception, well, it lets law enforcement sometimes enter a place without a warrant if the situation is urgent enough. And we're going to look at how this plays out specifically in drug cases because we know you need to get up to speed on this stuff quickly. And we're here to help you cut through the confusion.
Right. And a really good case to look at here is one from the Second Circuit back in the 1990s called United States v. McDonald. This case involved a situation in Manhattan where law enforcement entered an apartment without a warrant during a drug operation. And this wasn't just any decision, it was what's called an in-bank decision, which means all the judges in the circuit court heard this case and made a decision together. So you know it's an important one.
Okay, so by really breaking down McDonald, we can learn a lot about how the courts try to find that balance between giving law enforcement the power they need to do their job and protecting everyone's constitutional rights. So let's start with the basics. What actually happened in this case? Like, what led up to this whole legal battle?
So back in September 1988, the New York Drug Enforcement Task Force got a bunch of tips that there was some kind of drug operation going on in an apartment at 321 Edgecombe Avenue in Manhattan.
So they start investigating, right? What do they do first?
Right. So the first thing they do is set up surveillance on the apartment. They're watching who comes and goes. And what they see is a pattern of behavior that looks a lot like a drug dealing operation. People coming and going quickly, exchanges happening, you know, the kind of stuff you would expect to see in a typical street level drug deal.
So it's looking suspicious,
Yeah.
and that leads to them sending in an undercover agent.
Exactly. They send in agent James Age to make an undercover buy. And the really important part here is what Agent Age sees while he's inside the apartment.
Okay, what did he see?
Well, he saw drugs and guns just lying out in the open. This is huge because not only does it confirm that there's illegal activity going on, but it also means there's a potential danger to the officers.
So Agent Age gets out safely after making the buy. What happens next?
So about 10 minutes later, Agent Age goes back to the apartment, but this time he's got backup with him, a whole team from the task force.
All right, so now they've got a group of agents outside the apartment. What do they do?
They do what they're supposed to do. They knock on the door and announce that they're the police. And right after, they say that they hear people shuffling around inside the apartment. You know, like they're trying to get away or maybe hide something.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound good. So that's when they decide to force their way in.
Yeah. At that point, the agents have a lot to consider. They know there's drug activity going on. They know there are guns in the apartment. And now it seems like the people inside are trying to run. So they make the call to use a battering ram to break down the door.
And what did they find inside?
Well, they find exactly what Agent Age said they would. Drugs, guns, and cash all out in plain view. They arrest five people inside the apartment, including Errol McDonald, who becomes the defendant in this case.
And that's where the legal challenge comes in. McDonald argues that they shouldn't have been able to just barge into his apartment without a warrant. He says his Fourth Amendment rights were violated and wants the evidence they found thrown out. So what's the big legal issue that the court has to decide?
The court has to figure out whether the circumstances in this case were urgent enough to allow the agents to enter without a warrant. This is where that exigent circumstances exception comes into play. And a really closely related question is, did the police actually create the urgent situation by showing up the way they did? You know, did their actions essentially force the people inside to react in a way that made the situation seem more urgent than it actually was?
Okay, so let's dig into this whole idea of exigent circumstances. What exactly does that mean when we're talking about the Fourth Amendment?
Basically, exigent circumstances means there's some kind of emergency that requires the police to act right away, even if they don't have time to get a warrant. It has to be something really serious, like someone's in danger, or evidence is about to be destroyed, or a suspect's about to escape. In those situations, the law says the police can act first and worry about the warrant later.
So how does the court decide if there actually were exigent circumstances? Is there like a checklist they use?
There is, and it comes from a Supreme Court case called Dorman v. United States. There are a bunch of factors that courts look at when they're trying to figure out if the police were justified in acting without a warrant. These are called the Dorman factors.
Okay, tell us about these Dorman factors. How would they apply to a case like McDonald?
Sure. So the first factor is the seriousness of the crime. In the McDonald case, we're talking about drug trafficking, which is a felony, so it's a pretty serious offense. The second factor is whether the police had a good reason to believe the suspect was armed. And remember, Agent Ajameed saw guns in the apartment, so that's a big check mark for that factor.
Yeah, that seems pretty relevant here. What's the next factor?
The third one is whether the police had strong, probable cause to believe that the suspect had actually committed a crime. And again, Agent Age bought drugs inside the apartment, so there's definitely probable cause there. The fourth factor is whether it was likely that this suspect was actually in the place where the police wanted to search. And again, in this case, they had reason to believe the suspects were inside the apartment because that's where the drug deal happened and that's where they saw people running around when they knocked.
Right. And then things got even more tense when the agents got to the apartment. How does that play into the Dorman factors?
Exactly. So the fifth factor is whether there was a risk that the suspect would escape. And remember, the agents heard that shuffling sound right after they announced themselves, which definitely suggests that someone was trying to make a run for it. And finally, the sixth factor is whether the police at least tried to enter peacefully. And in this case, they did knock and announce themselves before they broke down the door.
So it sounds like a lot of these factors were present in McDonald. But is it just a matter of checking off boxes?
No, it's not that simple. The Dorman factors aren't like a magic formula where if you have enough of them, then the police are automatically in the clear. The court has to look at all the circumstances together and decide if the situation as a whole was so urgent that the police couldn't wait for a warrant. It's what they call a totality of the circumstances test.
Got it. So what did the Second Circuit actually decide in this case? What was Judge Altomare's reasoning in siding with the government?
Judd Altomare, writing for the majority of the court, said that the urgent situation in this case came from a few things happening all at once. First, there was the ongoing drug dealing operation, which is a serious crime. Second, there were loaded guns in the apartment, which obviously creates a dangerous situation. And third, the people inside the apartment tried to run as soon as they knew the police were there.
And the fact that the agents knocked and announced themselves before going in, how did that figure into the court's decision?
The court thought it was really important that the agents followed proper procedure by knocking and announcing. They said that the police didn't do anything wrong to create the urgent situation. It was the suspects who created it by trying to get away. So the police were justified in entering the apartment without a warrant because they were responding to the suspect's actions. But this doesn't mean that the police can just barge into any place whenever they want. Courts will always look carefully at these cases to make sure that the police really believed there was an emergency and that their belief was reasonable based on what they knew at the time.
And there's that great line from the decision where the court says, law enforcement agents are required to be innocent, but not naive. What does that mean in this case?
Basically, the court is saying that the police can't just ignore obvious signs that something illegal is going on. They have to be aware of their surroundings and react accordingly. In this case, it would have been pretty naive for the agents to just stand outside the apartment and wait for a warrant when they could hear people scrambling around inside, especially knowing there were drugs and guns in there.
So what was the main reason the court ultimately gave for saying that the police were allowed to enter the apartment without a warrant?
They said the gravity of the offense and presence of firearms created an urgent need to act. Basically, they're saying that because drug trafficking is a serious crime and because there were guns involved, it would have been too risky to wait for a warrant. The suspects might have gotten away or they might have destroyed evidence, and the officers or even the public could have been in danger.
But not everyone on the court agreed with that decision, right? Judge Kearse wrote a dissent. What were her main points of disagreement?
Judge Kearse had some really strong concerns about the majority's decision. Her main point was that there wasn't actually any emergency before the police showed up and knocked on the door. In her view, the police created the emergency by alerting the suspects to their presence.
So she's saying that the police basically caused the very situation that they then used to justify going inside.
Exactly. She said that just because the police had a good reason to suspect that there were drugs in the apartment, which is probable cause, doesn't mean they automatically have the right to barge in. She said there has to be some kind of immediate threat that makes it absolutely necessary to enter without a warrant. And just having guns in a house isn't enough to create that kind of emergency.
And she also talked about the danger of a slippery slope, right? Like, what if the police start using this kind of reasoning all the time?
Right. She was worried that if the police can just knock on a door and then claim that the suspect's reaction justifies a warrantless entry, then the Fourth Amendment doesn't really mean much anymore. She thought this could give the police way too much power to search people's homes without a warrant. You know, it does make you think about how quickly things can escalate in these situations and how tough it must be for officers to make the right call in the heat of the moment.
So what was the most important line from her dissent that sums up her whole argument?
She said, exigency arose only after agents' deliberate actions alerted suspects. Basically, she's saying that the police created the urgent situation themselves by going back to the apartment and announcing their presence. If they had stayed away and gotten a warrant, she argued there wouldn't have been any need to rush in.
So we have this split between the majority opinion and the dissent. The majority says the police did everything right, and the suspect's reaction justified the warrantless entry. And the dissent says the police basically caused the reaction they were reacting to.
Right, that's the heart of the disagreement. And it all comes down to when exactly the emergency started. Did it exist before the police got there, or did the police create it by showing up?
Yeah, that's the key question. So what does all this mean for law students? What's the big takeaway from United States v. McDonald?
This case shows us how the courts, especially in the Second Circuit, try to apply the exigent circumstances exception when it comes to drug cases. The big lesson here is that if the police are following the rules, like knocking and announcing, and the suspects do something to make the situation more urgent, like trying to escape, then a court might decide that it was okay for the police to enter without a warrant. But it's important to remember that this case was decided on its very specific facts, and the court made it clear that this exception should only be used in very limited situations. It's not a free pass for the police to ignore the Fourth Amendment.
So in a way, this case gives the police a bit more power to act quickly in these high-stakes situations, right? Especially when there are drugs and guns involved.
It does seem to give them more leeway. But as Judge Kearse pointed out, there's always a risk the police could abuse this power. They could try to find ways to create an emergency just so they can get inside without a warrant. That's why the courts have to look at these cases so carefully to make sure that the police are acting in good faith.
And for someone who's just learning about the Fourth Amendment and how it works in real life, what's the most important thing to understand about this case?
United States v. McDonald is a really good example of how the courts try to balance two very important things: making sure the police can do their job and protecting people from unreasonable searches. It's a constant balancing act, and the courts are always trying to find the right line.
So what's the key takeaway from McDonald? What should our listeners really remember about this case?
The most important thing to remember is that in the Second Circuit, at least, if the police go to a place, knock on the door, announce themselves, and then the people inside try to run away, that can be enough to justify a warrantless entry, especially if there's evidence of a serious crime, like drug trafficking, and especially if there are guns involved.
And this case really highlights that constant tension, doesn't it? The need to let law enforcement act quickly versus the need to protect people's rights.
Absolutely. And it brings up a really interesting question that Judge Kearse touched on. When exactly does someone's reaction to the police knocking on their door become an emergency? And what can the police do to make sure that they aren't the ones creating that emergency in the first place? That's a tough question that courts and legal scholars are still debating.
It's definitely something to keep in mind as you continue to learn about the Fourth Amendment and how it plays out in the real world. Thanks for taking the time to break this down for us.
Of course, it's such an important area of law.
And for all of our listeners out there, we encourage you to keep digging into the Fourth Amendment and its complexities. It's fascinating stuff, and we'll be back with another deep dive soon. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.
See you next time.